This is an interview with Mrs. Betsy Wallace for the Youngstown State University 1985 Tornado Project by Molly McNamara. Today's date is Wednesday, December 13th, 1989. We are at Mrs. Wallace's home in Niles, Ohio, and the time is approximately 9:30 in the morning. Okay. All right, Mrs. Wallace, tell me a little bit about yourself. What do you do in a normal day?
Well, we get the kids off to school, and then I either go to work or do things around the house. And then the kids come home from school, and we run around and do the things that all parents do with kids that are in high school and elementary. I work for Troutman's. I work part-time as a pharmacist. I do relief work for them. I work one 10-hour day a week, and then anything else that they need filled in. Mm-hmm.
That's a long day.
Yeah, but it gets it out of the way in one day.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay. And you're also on the school board here in New York?
Right. I sit on the school board, and that takes an incredible amount of time.
Yeah, I imagine.
But it's kind of rewarding at times.
Okay, so your life is pretty busy, pretty fulfilling.
Right. With kids at this age, it's just very busy running around and getting them from place to place and trying to work off everybody's schedule together so that we can occasionally sit down and have dinner together.
Yeah. Okay, I want to take you back to May 31st, 1985 and talking about the tornado. Now, do you remember that day in particular? Most people, it stands out and they know exactly what they were doing. Tell me what you were doing that day.
Well, the thing that I vividly remember is sitting on the steps, the basement steps, talking on the telephone to a friend of mine at about, it must have been 4:30 in the afternoon, because the next thing I saw was the kids bringing all their toys in from the swimming pool, all their inflatable toys. And I said, "What are you doing?" And Carrie said to me, "We're going to have a tornado." And I said, "Oh, right." And I'm laughing with this friend of mine on the phone, and they're bringing all this stuff in to put in the basement. It had gotten, you know, it was kind of a nasty day.
How did they know that?
I don't know. Honestly, that's what I mean. It's just so vivid because it was such a bizarre thing for them to say.
Yeah.
I think that the training that they get at school about tornadoes and how to, you know, prepare and where to go and so forth.
If so, that's
makes
great.
Makes them, you know, acutely aware of it.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I can't imagine what would have made them say, "I think we're going to have a tornado."
Yeah.
Or not, I think, but she just definitely said we're going to have a tornado.
Yeah.
So they brought all their stuff in and we laughed on the phone. And they, you know, we closed up the house and everything. And Jeff came home from work and it had started to storm. And the kids were really nervous and had gone to the basement.
Really?
Yeah, and Jeff and I were kind of, you know, poo-pooing the whole thing, and I walked out on the front porch, and we just had huge hail and drops of water, and I was told later that there were a lot of that was the water from Mosquito Creek that was being dropped back.
Oh, really?
Down
I didn't hear that.
And they said all that creek water was sucked up and then dropped down in this area. But at any rate, I called the kids. I was telling them to come up out of the basement to come look at this. Well, this is how foolish you feel. There's the kids doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And as adults, you should be, you know, down in the basement instructing them. And they were the ones that were telling us, "You've got to come down to the basement." And we could see debris, only at the time we didn't know it was debris. It was just over the rooftops of Pentecost's house. And, you know, we looked and thought, "What is all that?" You know, it was just this big cloud of stuff going by. We didn't ever see the funnel or anything, but we just saw all this stuff flying by over the treetops.
Was the sky black over that way, or was it?
Yeah, it was a just kind of a typical stormy day.
Yeah.
We didn't really even have that much wind right here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just very, you know, right over the tops, and that was all we could see was the stuff flying by over the trees in the park. And so then, you know, the rain stopped and so forth, and we wanted to go run out to Kmart or something. And, you know, not having any idea that anything had happened, we got jumped in the car. Somebody was having a birthday party. We had to run out and get a gift for or something. And we drove up the hill to the park, and we could see all this stuff laying around. Mm-hmm. And then as we kind of found, you could see that there were trees down all over the park.
Yeah.
And when we got down to Hartzell, there was insulation every place.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, Jeff said, I think there's been a tornado. Well, my parents live right there.
Oh, God.
And I thought, oh. So we, you know, just panic-stricken, didn't know what to think. And, you know, so we're only several blocks from them, but, you know,
what street do they live on?
Barclay, which is just two streets this way from the cemetery.
Uh-huh.
And we got over there, and my dad was out of town, but my mom was there, and she was fine. And a tree had fallen into their garage, but, you know, everybody else was okay. And so we walked down to the corner, and we could see, you know, that it had gone through the cemetery.
Now, by this, did you hear anything? Did you know that there had been a tornado?
No, but we knew then because we could see.
Obviously, yeah.
Right, and we could see that Convenient was gone.
Oh,
and a very good friend of ours owns that. And one of the places that I work for Troutman's is the Medicine Man, which was, you know.
So, damaged severely.
Yes, and so at that point, we left the kids at my mother's till Jeff and I got in the car to see if there was anything we could do to help. And I wanted to get to the drugstore. I'm the only one that works for Troutman's that lives in Niles.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see, you could see from the hilltop that the side of the building was gone.
Yeah.
And so I asked the police if I could go down, and Jeff and I went down and loaded up all the narcotics.
Yeah.
Into our car.
You know, we were just talking about that the other day. Excuse me. Because there was one picture where I don't know if it was a news clip or what, where I had seen this, where the whole building was just boarded up. And that was one of the things my husband was saying, that they must have closed that up immediately.
Yeah.
Because of all the drugs in there.
Yeah. We went right down, and it was just so strange. I guess I had no idea that a tornado was so localized, you know, mm-hmm. that you were either in it or you weren't.
Yeah.
And at the drugstore, the wall was gone, completely gone, but the counter was still there. The drugs were still on the shelf in order. And the plug that the register is plugged into was plugged into the wall, which was gone, and the register was still sitting on the counter. It was just incredible. Anyway, we loaded up all the narcotics and locked them in the car and got those out of there, because my main concern at that point was that, you know, somebody would get
come in and
get the drugs and so forth, and, you know, had gotten in touch with
that was really good thinking, though, because...
Well, it's kind of something, as a pharmacist, it's the first thing you worry about.
Really?
Who's going to take the narcotics if the drugstore is standing, you know, open to the... And they had a policeman down there already.
Oh, did they?
They had somebody posted there, and so, you know, I explained who I was, and I don't remember if it was somebody I knew that knew that I worked there or what it was, but regardless, we did get all that taken care of.
Yeah.
And it was just such an incredible, you know, I guess you just have no idea about the power and so forth of it till you actually see it. You know, you could see the cars piled up and into the telephone poles and so forth right there at the cemetery, because that was, you know, it was just incredible to see.
Now, this was immediately after.
This was immediately, right.
So I guess you did see everything firsthand.
Right. Well, and you know, obviously it's one of those things where even if you have a little bit of medical training, the first thing you feel is you've got to ask if there's something you can do to help, which is why, you know, we had gone down. But they, you know, certainly had everything under control immediately, I felt.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, they had somebody posted right at the drugstore making sure nobody was in there. They had people down, you know, trying to get through the debris at Convenient, and it was just very, it does come back to you.
Yeah,
so you just
sure
start thinking, it's just very vivid. The whole evening was just, you know, very.
So where did you go from there?
Well, at that point, then we went up. Seems to me they were using Washington School as kind of a central location at that point, and they were beginning to use that you know, for people to bring blankets and pillows mm-hmm. and so forth in, and so and flashlights and so forth. And so, you know, we collected some stuff to take up there for them that, you know, they felt they might be able to use. And I think from that point, I can't really remember, you know, just that, you know, we had the several more warnings that night.
Yeah.
And, you know, no electricity, obviously, and we kind of, we had an old sofa bed in the basement, so the kids had that all fixed up so that we could stay down there that night, because everybody
yeah.
was just
petrified.
Totally petrified
yeah.
that, you know, something was going to happen again. And
how did you get involved down at the high school with the Red Cross down there? Now, was that just volunteer work?
It was just volunteer. I suppose when I had taken some stuff up to Washington, they were looking for people to help with
uh-huh.
whatever. And I suppose I had probably talked to Mary Jane Dell or something and said, what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they said they really needed somebody to help with the clothing collection and so forth. And so, you know, she asked me, would I be willing to do that? And I said, yeah, you know, I'd done that before for stuff for the church. Yeah, it's kind of one of those that
sure, I'll do it.
Yeah. Say, okay, if that's what you need, I'll do it.
Yeah.
But
what did that entail?
Oh, geez, people just, you know, the amount of clothing and so forth that people donated was just, yeah, I think it filled three rooms.
I remember going down
bags.
There and seeing it, yeah.
Yeah, and we kind of tried to sort through it and find what was usable and what wasn't usable.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, eventually, you know, when the whole thing was done and everything, then they had trucks come in and take the stuff away that wasn't, you know, used, that people didn't particularly need. But people, you know, they needed sheets and blankets and clothing for some of the, you know, people in the general vicinity that had
mm-hmm.
been left with nothing. And, you know, people were very generous with things. So that was, you know, about it. Just kind of helped out, you know, with a few other things. I know that there were a lot of teachers that went down and worked on the food lines and so forth.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think that was, you know,
that was your main job down there.
Yeah.
How long did this last? How long were you down there?
I want to say it was about a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because by that point people had pretty much gotten what they needed in the way of immediate.
Did a lot of people come in there and use the clothing and stuff, or was there a lot left?
There was a lot left.
Yeah. Was that because there was such an abundance of stuff,
yes.
or that they just, people
there
didn't
was,
bother?
There was an abundance of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'd say more of the lower income people, you know, that could really use the clothes
yeah.
came and took advantage of that. But, you know, a lot of the areas, like the Shadow Ridge area, you know, most of those people didn't have an immediate need for it. And,
yeah.
And so,
I was just curious as to how many.
It was just an incredible, my, you can't believe the amount of stuff. And, you know, some of it really wasn't usable.
Yeah.
You know, people just
gave.
Sometimes ended up, you know, putting bags of stuff that really wasn't.
Yeah, I wonder what they did with all that eventually, if it went to some of the other places.
It did. I want to say, and I'm just not sure about this, but it sticks in my mind that some church group came with a truck and
uh-huh.
took it to some place down south that they felt that they could use, you know,
yeah.
some of the stuff that they were just in desperate need for clothing.
Yeah.
And that's, like I said, that's just kind of a vague memory. I couldn't honestly tell you that that's for
yeah.
certain what happened to it afterwards.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't be surprised, though.
Yeah.
They probably shipped it all out rather than throw it away
right.
or something.
Right.
Yeah.
I think, you know, once everybody had gotten what they needed, that I think that's what happened
mm-hmm.
to it. So, and then I, the only other thing that I really did in an official capacity was to serve on the, they needed a representative from our church to serve on the, initially it was the churches that kind of got together
yeah,
to form
right.
the coalition. And,
now, what did that do?
Well, they organized everything in a very, you know, to actually structure it as to what needs there were and the priorities and so forth, and collecting and accepting donations. Many of the denominations donated large amounts of money, mm-hmm. and they were donated to the coalition so that they could in turn divvy it up where it was most needed.
Right.
And I think that that lasted about a year. I think
oh, really?
They, you know, mm-hmm. kept it an official capacity for that amount of time.
Because how did they decide who got what and that kind of thing?
Well, if I recall correctly, we had monthly meetings, and each area that had been affected had someone that was kind of their spokesperson and would come
oh, really?
and describe what needs they had, what individuals, you know, had in the way of needs, and what the area mm-hmm. had in the way of needs. And I'm really kind of foggy on, you know, that. I just remember going to meetings and
lots of meetings.
You know, yes, lots of meetings. And you know, I don't ever remember anything. You would expect maybe that it would end up in arguments, that this group needed more of that, and I don't remember that ever happened
uh-huh.
in the group. That you know, that they were really very good about trying to make sure that everything was spread out on an equal basis. I think they helped some people with their applications for the federal relief. And
I see. Well, there must have been enough money then to cover all of it, though, in the coalition. There must have been enough money to cover all these areas, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, as I recall, it was, you know, people were just very generous with donations.
Right.
And as I said, I know that several of the denominations donated, you know, maybe each individual church collected and they sent it to their main office or whatever. And then I know Catholic Charities was involved very mm-hmm. heavily with it, and I just don't remember that there being any great need that wasn't able to be met at that
yeah.
point.
And I wonder if I know some huge organizations such as the B&O Railroad, and I'm trying to think of one of the other big ones that was donated, and I think it was it to the Niles Coalition or was it to the Red Cross? They gave like $40,000 or so. I know it was B&O, but I'm not sure. They said that they wanted to donate that large amount of money because they came through Niles all
mm-hmm.
the time. They saw what had happened here,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't sure who they donated it to. It might have been.
I don't remember, and I can't remember exactly what the relationship was between the coalition and the Red Cross. I know that they worked, you know, hand
yeah.
in hand on this, and I don't remember, you know, whether they donated to Red Cross or if it was donated to the coalition or if they kind of combined the money. I just frankly can't remember
yeah.
how that was all. Have you spoken to Frank Bassett?
No,
he was
I haven't.
The chairman of that coalition.
Okay.
And he might be somebody you might want to just, even if you talk to him on the phone, he could give you
okay.
some of the
yeah, that
more
sounds
specific
good.
Details about what the coalition did.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember that they hired Sue Hetherington to
yeah.
be the...
her name comes up every time,
right.
every time I talk to somebody. Yeah.
Right. I think maybe she was involved with Catholic Charities at the time.
Yeah, I believe she was.
And that's how she ended up being the choice for that.
Do you think that accomplished much?
I think it did. You know, I think that... it was certainly a nice structure so that everybody wasn't going off on their own. I think that kind of
yeah.
pulled all the areas together and that they all worked together to help each other rather
yeah.
than, you know, having each area, you know, try to deal with their own needs. This way everybody kind of combined their efforts and worked on it as a team,
mm-hmm.
really. But I think Frank could probably give you some more
okay.
specific information as to...
Yeah, that sounds good. What do you think this could happen again in Niles? And if it did, do you think we're prepared for it this time?
I think it could happen again, and I don't think it's anything you can prepare for at all. I think that the emergency, you know, sirens are probably a step in the right direction. I've certainly bought a weather radio with an alarm. And
every single person I've talked to has told me that
yes.
I have bought one.
Yes. I wanted to make sure each of the schools had one.
Yeah.
And sure, I think it can happen again. I think if you're in an area like we are that has had two tornadoes go through, then there must be something with the geography of the area that makes it an area where a tornado is likely.
Yeah.
And no, I don't think you can prepare for it any more than you can prepare for any natural disaster. Yeah. I mean, it isn't like you can build earthquake-proof buildings or
but it's still going to happen, right?
Right. You know, there are certain things you can do to prepare for some. You know, you can evacuate when you know that there's a hurricane coming, but there's no way to really do anything with a tornado other than get to a safe place. And that's, you know, if you even have a few minutes warning, you can get to a safe place, but you can't do anything to prevent the destruction, which you can really with some other natural disasters. I think, yeah, it could happen again, and I think we're as prepared as we can be. You know, mm-hmm. I think we need to keep stressing it in the schools, you know.
That's what I was going to ask you about.
Certainly our kids were well prepared.
I guess they were.
You know, and frankly, much better than Jeff and I. Uh-huh. You know, I think they take it much more seriously than we did.
Yeah.
I certainly would take it seriously now, having seen, you know, what it, I think when you hear about a tornado, you don't have any idea what they're talking about destruction-wise until you've actually seen, you know, the pieces of wood driven into a wall, and, you know, you have no idea of the power of it.
Being on the board now, you were on the board then.
Mm-mm.
No, okay.
No, I wasn't on the board.
Well, has there been any change in the schools, you think, now?
As far as preparedness?
Right.
No, because I think they were, you know, right on top of it at that point. I don't think anything additional really needed to be done, because I think they were doing a really mm-hmm. good job of training the kids as to what the correct procedure was and so forth. So no, I don't think, other than, like I said, I wanted to make sure that we had weather radios in the building so that at least they'd have that couple minutes extra warning.
Yeah, which is important.
Right.
There's really just one other question I have to ask you. Something I ask everybody. What is probably your most vivid, most lasting impression of this whole event, if there is just one that you could think of? Something that just stands out in your mind.
Well, for me, it's really the kids saying ahead of time that we were going to have a tornado.
Yeah.
I will never get over that. It was just one of those things that I think about frequently, you know. The other one is, of course, I just can't quit thinking or seeing the drugstore without the wall.
Yeah.
Because those two things were very personal to me at that point.
Yeah.
You know, that I was so glad the kids, you know, had a feeling that they should be someplace safe.
Yeah, that's good,
and
that you weren't all spread
right.
out over in aisles or anything
right.
like that.
And, you know, I guess just the shock of, I work here and this is, you know, I could have been working here at the time.
Is that where you are currently? I mean, they've rebuilt that, obviously.
Right, right. And it's, you know, I guess those are just the two most vivid things to me.
Okay.
I suppose most people have vivid memories of something that's kind of personal
yeah.
to them.
Oh, sure.
You know, and those would be the two most.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add that I haven't asked you? I'm trying to think of.
I think I've kind of run through everything I can think about it, at any rate. I think initially you think, and some of it is, will always be very vivid.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at the time you think, oh, I'll never get over this. I will never quit worrying every time
I remember
have a
feeling
black
that
sky.
Way.
Mm-hmm. You know, every time we went anywhere for the next year or two, you know, I would be constantly searching the sky to see if it looked like the same kind of sky we had that day. And I do remember what the sky looked like that day. It's, you know, that's very vivid. But it does fade with time, you know, and I suppose as anything, you know, it just, you know, you remember specific things about it, but the overall thing kind of fades with time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably why it's a good reason to do something like this, that, you know, if you can still catch people where they still have at least some vivid memories of it, then you will have a good after.
That's why I try to get people that were involved, because everybody, I think, has an impression about it,
mm-hmm.
but most of the people like I've interviewed, like you, you were involved for a week at a time, which most people had a couple of hours. They dealt with the experience, and then it was over for them. So that's why I try to get people that were involved for longer than just a day.
Right.
A day or so.
Well, I wish I could remember more specific details about what was done during the time, but I think that's just one of those things that they needed help. I was willing to help.
That's important, though.
And that's, I didn't think it was any big deal. It was just...
Something you did.
Something I did. I just didn't think it was anything special. It was just... It's just kind of it, so
okay.
That was it.
I want to thank you for the interview.
Oh, you're welcome. I don't feel like there's a lot of help, but...